we just had this conversation as a leadership team. We shouldn't be just jumping in price to get more deals.
Yeah.
That's not the way that you make money. You need to learn how to identify and problem solve more and more deals, not just increase your price and be the highest bidder. And so I think it's important to acknowledge, like, you may know it's a wholesale deal, but you better be extremely sure if you're going to be off from your flip number, which we've done a few times.
Yeah.
But it's only in markets that we know super, super well. Hey there, welcome back to the Pursuit of Property podcast. I am sitting here with my co-host, Cade Barrett. Cade, how is your day going?
Dude, it is going good so far. We are right now at the beginning of April. We just closed out March with our team with a huge fucking month, not only in closed deals with money coming back into the business, but also you guys over on sales and acquisitions being one contract shy of our February, obviously yearly high, wrapping up with 10 contracts signed in 10. March. So, dude, coming off a great March, heading into a very busy April for the team. Feeling good, man.
Yeah.
Ready to keep our foot on the gas and keep things moving.
Yeah, in the last 8 weeks, we've signed 22 contracts.
Bonkers.
Yeah, it's been a lot, and I think it leads into our conversation about what do you do when you have 22 contracts? I mean, we don't have enough contractors to flip that in a reasonable amount of time, right? And so we've had to be creative, and I think being creative is what's led to, you know, March being a monster year or a monster month for us.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about it a lot where, you know, when you lock in a deal, you have to be able to have the tools in your tool belt, to analyze which disposition method is going to be the most profitable, right? Whether you're going to wholesale it, whether you're going to fix and flip it, or whether you're going to wholesale it, which we're talking more about today. And like you said, when there's 22 contracts signed in the span of 8 weeks, even if every single one, when we break down the numbers, will be more profitable as a flip, we just can't do it. We have to pick and choose, you know, which ones are going to be the grand slams as flips. And then even though something else might be more profitable as a flip, we have to figure out, are we going to wholesale this thing or are we going to wholesale it? Because the capacity to flip it is just not there.
Yeah. And again, if we had unlimited resources and we could, we would flip all of them because they typically make more money. Now, we've come to find out that sometimes flipping isn't always the best way to make the most money.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that's been a learning curve for us in the last 12 months. But it's been interesting to see. And when we went to Investor Fuel, I told you about this. We found out that most markets right now can't do wholetailing. And that Central California is one of the few places where that's successful. And I think that caveat's needed because we kind of need to talk a little bit about market conditions and why this is working.
Yeah. And again, to reiterate, when we talk about a wholetail, before we kind of get into the meat and potatoes of it, a wholetail is you are closing on the property as if you are going to flip it, but the property is decent enough to where if it needs a trash out or any small miscellaneous thing, I'll say, you know, under $5,000 or less, because sometimes you may still need to do an exterior paint job or an interior paint job, but you are not touching the structure of the house. And then you're turning around and listing it back up on the open market fairly quickly and then reselling it at that point.
Right. Now, let's talk about the market conditions that make kind of the Fresno area and surrounding areas successful. Because, again, we talked to guys that were in Texas and Florida and the Carolinas and Maryland. All of those guys said that they can't do it. And we've found it's actually been our number one exit strategy so far year to date.
Yeah.
And it was one of our top performing last year. I think probably the key indicator as to why it works in our market is just because of inventory, right? Like California is a big chunk of the housing crisis nationwide. And I think because our local market is so much cheaper than the Bay Area or LA area, we've just got cheaper housing that people can sell a property up in one of these higher price point markets and then pay cash on one of these properties that we're flipping.
Well, and it segues into, right, with the lack of inventory, the motivation of buyers is still there, right? People are always going to need to buy and subsequently sell houses, right? So somebody, maybe your typical buyer, where they can't get into any new construction, maybe because building has slowed down a little bit and the wait lists are already a mile long, is somebody might be more comfortable, especially in our market, going into something that needs a little bit of a refresh and being fine and being okay with that, as long as they can just get into the house itself, right? Instead of still waiting on the sidelines.
Yeah, but we were looking at it. I mean, the majority of our buyers on these wholetails are other mm-hmm. investors. So the other part to it is there's a lot of investors who aren't finding deals. They aren't getting them at the right price. And, you know, if you're good at identifying sellers and getting them at a price that makes sense, you're controlling the inventory for the investor pool as well. There's, you know, tons of investors that want to buy rentals. They want to buy flips. They want to buy not as many Airbnbs nowadays. But we're noticing that even a lot of investors who are slower, big guys, small guys, people in the middle, they're all needing deals too. So our team's been pretty good and lucrative at getting really good pricing and motivated sellers. We are then able to make that decision to list it on the MLS and blast it out to all these investors who maybe aren't good at sourcing their own deals.
And that's the key part too, because somebody might be sitting there thinking, okay, if you're just selling to an investor anyway, why not just wholesale it and cut the corner, save on the commission, save on the time? It's a lot quicker. The benefit of closing on it and then, you know, trying to resell it is exactly like you said. The biggest benefit is the MLS. Regardless of however big your buyer's list is, the MLS, at least at this point in time, is always where you're going to get the most amount of eyes, no matter how big your buyer's list is.
And this is the same thing we tell sellers, right? We always say, if you want to get top dollar, put it on the MLS.
Yes.
And, you know, some of the ones that we've had this year that have closed out late last year, or early this year. I mean, we had a reverse mortgage short sale that we bought. We had a seller who evicted tenants and lived out of state and didn't want to deal with realtors. We had a property with familial tenants and didn't want to deal with getting them out. Those were all deals where they sold it to us instead of listing it because they didn't want to deal with you know, the buyer pool that is going to be on the MLS. We just had to put in the legwork to deal with listing it, fielding offers, getting through contract and closing, and we were paid handsomely for it.
Yeah. Another thing with going the wholesale route, right, it may be a smaller aspect of it because, like you said, a lot of the buyers are investor buyers, but typically when you do choose to go the wholesale route is that the property should be at least decently pretty close or able to check the checkbox that it's going to be financeable in case someone is not using cash or X, Y, and Z, depending it again.
It really depends on the house.
Yeah. Like we had one that we threw up on the market. It's over in Corcoran that had great bones, ready to go. We decided to go the wholesale route, but just didn't get a ton of activity either from investor buyers or even regular retail buyers, even though it was ready to go in with someone with a conventional loan. And so then we ended up pulling it back and we're going to fix and flip it and put it back on. But interesting nonetheless that the Central Valley being pretty unique to the concept of wholesaling compared to, you know, the market or the nation as a whole.
Yeah, and a lot of the buyers that are buying our properties are local too.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like this is just big Bay Area money or big SoCal money or, you know, conglomerates. This is also like a mom and pop investor mm-hmm. who their skill is learning how to get the rehab done at a better price, because our job has just been to get them at the right price to begin with, where we don't have to be the best flipper. We're the best negotiator and marketer and salespeople. So I think it goes back to staying in your lane, doing what you do well. You know, our team's not designed to be the team that can flip houses for super, super cheap. Mm-hmm. We're the team that buys houses super, super cheap. And then if our budget's a little more than what the other investor may pay, we still had the sales skills and the problem solving to actually get the deal.
Yeah.
So I think that all plays a part. Talking about a little bit, when you get into to contract and if you're trying to figure that out, I think the key indicator that tells you if this is even a feasible wholesale deal or wholetail deal is occupancy. I think the hardest part with wholetail is if you have a tenant, you can't show it to buyers, and buyers on the MLS want to walk the home. Wholesale deals, they're typically more likely to be okay not walking it. Mm-hmm. But if you're going to be getting this market on the MLS, you need to have the ability to show the home. We always say in listings, availability is the best ability. So being vacant, I think, is probably more important than even if you can get any kind of financing.
100%. And the hard thing about this too is it's all situational, and it's the horrible answer of it depends, right? Because we had one over in Selma or Sanger that we just closed on where it had tenants in place and we had to wait 90 days.
Selma,
and it was tenant occupied, but we were patient. We waited 90 days. We did a cash for keys agreement, and then that ended up being our most profitable wholetail of the year, right?
I'm saying, like, before you get it listed, I think you want to make sure it's
Yeah.
Had we listed it with those tenants, I don't think we get anywhere close.
Nowhere near. No. And I think that's where it comes with people need to be patient, right? And not let that occupancy be a deterrent to that, kind of dispo method, but absolutely needing to make sure it's vacant if you're going the wholetail route.
And again, going back to being good salespeople, those tenants worked with us. We didn't have to evict them. It saved them money. It saved us money, and it got done quicker. And, we got rewarded for working with them and getting them out that way than trying to go through the eviction process, which we would still be in right now.
Yeah. The other thing that we were talking about that is a huge key piece of the wholetail disposition route is the functionality of the main components of the house, right?
Yes, we just talked about that.
Roof, windows, HVAC, are all of those kind of main key parts of the house working?
Big ticket items.
All of the big ticket items. Assessing the condition of those, because when those are dialed in and ready to go, that usually is an indicator that it will make a better wholetail, right? As opposed to if those were in shit condition.
Right. That's where I think flippers make probably the most money when the house is really distressed.
Yeah.
I think when the home is like just outdated but well-maintained, I think that's where the flipper's profit margin gets really cut down, because a seller's not going to want to sell for 50 cents on the dollar if it's just outdated. Mm-hmm. And as the investor, you need to understand, like, you still have to touch everything if it's outdated. But if, like you said, the big ticket items, the roof, the windows, the HVAC, sewer lines, things like that are all in good shape, then a lot of investors may look at this as a rental. They may look at it as a primary residence. There's a couple of different ways. And if it's just cosmetic, they're going to be able to get it done probably cheaper than we could, because really where we make money is when we have, you know, these huge construction projects, and where, you know, we bought it for $300 and it's worth $600 and we're putting $140 into it. That leaves enough room to make some money, because that's a lot of heavy lifting and the seller can acknowledge that. But, you know, if it's a clean house and it's vacant and it's X, Y, and Z, and you offer them $300 and it's worth $400 or $500, you know, the seller is going to start thinking, well, am I really giving $100,000 just because it's a little outdated?
Yeah.
And you have a harder time making those numbers pencil.
Well, and the thought that I have, and it segues into when someone's underwriting a deal, right? We obviously have our way of running numbers and running the deal as if we were going to go fix and flip it, right? Now, with this new addition to the tool belt of wholetailing, how does that affect the numbers and the breakdown on the sales and acquisition side, whether you're negotiating or you already have it under contract and you're trying to figure out what does that look like when you go to sell it on the back end?
We always operate off the flip model, because at the core, we don't want to lock up a deal that we wouldn't perform on, right? Our business model does not include canceling or price reducing. There's been few times where sellers lie to us, or where we have fraudulent sellers, right? That happens here and there. That's not our mistake, that's on them. But, you know, I don't want to ever turn to, you know, a 70-year-old seller who thought it was a done deal and say, hey, sorry, messed up, give me $50,000 off the price, right? So we always operate from a flip trajectory. Once we have it in contract, in escrow, there's a second kind of reanalysis where we look at it and we say, if we were to flip it, ideally, if everything goes right, we'll make $45,000. If we wholesale it, we're going to make $30,000. And if we wholesale it in escrow, don't close on it, we're going to make $20,000. And that's when the decision has to be made, right? Our experience has always been flipping comes with issues. There's almost no flips where there's no speed bump or issue or surprise.
Yeah.
So flipping is probably the most risky, and that's why it makes you the most. So we tend to say, okay, if a wholetail deal is going to make us 30, you know, are we in a position where we have a contractor we like, know, and trust who can do the flip? And if not, maybe we lean towards a wholetail just because you limit your exposure to potential issues.
Well, and like you said, when you run the numbers as if you're going to flip it, right, it allows you to have that backup plan, because we know this. It's happened to us plenty of times to where, hey, we want to decide and try throwing this thing back up on the market and doing it wholetail. But if you don't have any activity, you're not getting any bites, you're not getting any offers, where does that leave you? You're not going to want to turn around and sell it for a loss. So you need to be able to have enough buffer up front to where, hey, if this doesn't work out, we don't get an offer that we like.
We've got to go the whole way.
We've got to now rescind it back. Let's do the full fix and flip. We have the room because we ran our numbers that way up front. And now we're going to do that normal rehab before we turn it around.
Money's always made on the buy.
Yeah.
So we just had this conversation as a leadership team. We shouldn't be just jumping in price to get more deals.
Yeah.
That's not the way that you make money. You need to learn how to identify and problem solve more and more deals, not just increase your price and be the highest bidder. And so I think it's important to acknowledge, like, you may know it's a wholetail deal, but you better be extremely sure if you're going to be off from your flip number, which we've done a few times.
Yeah.
But it's only in markets that we know super, super well. For example, duplex in Exeter, our MAO, our max allowable offer, if we were to flip that duplex, would have been $130,000. We immediately saw $178,000 and accepted, because Exeter is a market we know pretty well. And we knew that we could wholetail it or wholesale it well over $210,000, right? And so immediately we knew there was enough room that at a bare minimum, we wholesale it for $10,000, $20,000, or we can wholetail it and make probably $20,000 or $30,000. And so there's only rare circumstances where we're going to go against our gut on if the flip numbers say it's a deal. I think that gut feeling comes from a lot of experience, though. So if you don't have that, that's when I think you really need to watch your flip numbers.
Yeah, it's not to give you the blind green light to go and sign, you know, become deal hungry. And when you have these giant gaps in price, just to go and immediately sign everything, right? It allows you just to put on that different lens of being cautiously optimistic to where when these situations pop up, to potentially pull the trigger where previously you may have not, because you didn't have all of these things added to your tool belt or the knowledge of, you know, the relationships, the processes, and, you know, et cetera, et cetera.
I think the other part is if you're newer, wholetailing is a lot easier.
Oh, a hell of a lot easier.
Like, we're not new by any means.
Yeah.
You know, cumulatively, our team has, if you include our contractor, we have north of 30 years of experience between all of us.
Yeah.
But even then, there's deals where our contractor goes, hey, just turn around and list this. This is probably easier to do it that way than to have us fix it. And, you know, it's good to have that relationship with your contractor because he's the one that's actually going to be watching the minute details for our team. Right? We're going to double check, but the day-to-day subs going out, he's going to be the one managing. So if you're newer and a wholetail deal may make you 30 and it's a lot easier, it's a lot like the same thought process for wholesaling. You know, yeah. Sometimes making a smaller amount sooner is better than trying to really make every penny on every deal, but then not be filling your pipeline with new deals.
Exactly. Especially again, when the capacity is not there, if you're trying to take on more and do more because on paper, it's supposed to make more, can end up coming to bite you in the ass because now there are a ton of things falling through the cracks within those projects. And now They're not as profitable as you were expecting them to be, and now probably even less profitable than if you were just to wholesale or wholetail them and bring in that quicker return.
Yeah, the scaling portion of flipping, like, you can't just assume because one deal makes sense on paper that if I'm doing 10 of those, they're all going to make sense.
Yeah.
Because when you're doing 10, you don't have the mental capacity to problem solve and keep on top of everything at the same time. So, you know, people forget about, like, as you expand your responsibilities, you just won't have time.
Yeah.
And the other part to it is people forget about interest, because part of wholetailing is you have to close on the deal. So they forget about interest, insurance, taxes. They forget that there's delays in your returns. So if you need to be sending out consistent marketing like our team does, mm-hmm. you know, cash flow is a big portion of part of our decision making. How many deals are closing in March? How many deals are closing in April? Because you have to pay all of your mortgages. You have to pay all of your overhead, all your salaries. So there's times where we'll actively turn down a monster deal to flip because it makes better sense to wholetail it to another investor, let them make that big rip, and you recapture some of your marketing dollars to keep the other projects that are going to make you money afloat.
And it ends up as a win-win, right? You can't hold yourself, you can't be held up thinking, oh, I could have made 20 grand more if I kept it as a flip, right? But when in reality, that faucet of marketing needs to stay on, because if that turns off, if that shuts off, it's a hell of a lot of work to get that well up and pumping again and that water running, especially if you're just kind of focusing just on the money and not taking in, taking that bird's eye view and accounting for every other piece of your business that's going into it.
I mean, and just being completely transparent, I mean, our team, as of the recording of this podcast, we have 29 projects in different stages.
Yeah.
And we have a full-time listing agent, a full-time project manager, a full-time acquisitions team, right? Multiple people. We have a transaction coordinator. We have a bookkeeper. I mean, we have so many people to try to manage that. And if our sales team was bogged down trying to manage all these acquisition escrows, we wouldn't have time to find the next new deal, right? And if you're trying to get to a point, like, I think really the place where you start needing to hire is after you get past two or three contracts at a time. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, if you have a fourth opportunity that pops up, maybe you need to consider wholesaling it or wholetailing it, because trying to have four flips going, one contractor usually can't do that. I mean, unless they're a bigger time contractor, which, I mean, at the start, nobody's paying the big guy because they're more expensive.
Yeah. Well, dude, you came strapped with the KPIs today, talking about wholetailing for the team. You shared a little nugget earlier that year to date, it has been our most profitable disposition method for our projects.
I didn't count how many total we've done for that total figure.
I want to say, well, you're pulling it up, but between the three disposition methods, fixing and flipping, wholesaling / assigning, and wholetailing has been our most profitable deal disposition method across the board between those three. And honestly, I think it's almost as sizable of a gap as, like, almost on average, almost $10,000 more on wholetails than our what's in second place, a full-on, full-blown fix and flip rehab,
which is significantly longer and more complex.
And that's insane.
So year to date, we've done over $250,000 in deal profit. Now, that doesn't account for overhead for, like, marketing and all those things, but we did that in six deals. I mean, that is significantly better than assigning properties or, for our company, flipping so far. And I think part of that is when you wholetail deals, you're not listing them for top dollar. So sometimes you put it up for $240 and it sells for $270 because there are three or four people that want it because there's room.
Yeah.
So sometimes you make that decision, I'm going to wholetail it and I think I'm going to make, you know, $30,000. Next thing you know, you do a $70,000 rip and it's a win.
Yeah.
Right? Versus flipping, it's very rare. We've had one this year on Waterford where we listed it for $599 and it went 20 over.
Yeah.
Most of the time we list something for $335 and it sells maybe $337, $320, or $330, mm-hmm. you know, somewhere within a few thousand bucks. Wholetailing, a lot more variable.
Yeah. And you've got to think the life cycle of our normal, and we have this data too, when we were talking about a couple episodes ago, the cash conversion cycle, the lead conversion cycle, obviously that cash conversion cycle for wholetails is a lot quicker than it is for a fix and flip just because of the timeline of the project. So looking at that, going back to the importance of keeping track of your KPIs is if you're a business owner looking at this and saying, okay, not only am I making more money on average per wholetail deal than I am for a flip, but it's also bringing in money quicker.
More rapidly.
Yeah, more rapidly than it is for a fix and flip. So I'm not strapped for cash trying to scrimp, you know, pick my pennies for our marketing budget. I'm making more money. Okay, at least right now in the market that we're in, let's look at each deal through the lens of, can we potentially put this down the road of a wholetail? And if not, we still have the options of fix and flipping or wholesaling it.
Yeah, and I think the thing that also comes up is like manpower. Wholetailing, if you have a good realtor, is significantly more significantly less man hours.
Yeah.
So if you can tell that you feel like a chicken running around with your head with your head chopped off, like this may be the right option to go just so that you have like some room to breathe, right? Like every flip has those moments where there's a ton of stuff going on and you're just overwhelmed. And if you want to kind of have a more balanced life, maybe wholetailing some and wholesaling some and flipping some is the right way to balance out just your man hours, right?
Now, it 100%. And when we talk about wholetailing, right, we've already said that right now, really big and a really well-producing dispo method here in the Valley. Do we think wholetails are here to stay?
No. I see you making that face. I think maybe you disagree.
No.
Oh, you agree.
I agree. Okay. I don't think they're here to stay either.
I think hard to say, actually, because the main driver for me has to be the inventory.
100%.
And you and I've already agreed we don't see the inventory getting better. So maybe anytime it is soon. Here to stay yeah. for a while.
Yeah.
There's seasons in real estate.
Of course.
You know, had you been doing this last year, I don't know if it's as valuable. With optimistic views of the market, interest rates are coming down slowly, inventory's low, a lot of flippers are hungry because they aren't finding deals, right? Sellers aren't calling them up and saying, I'm going to sell because they don't know where they're going to go. I think for now, wholetailing's good. And I think it's just a season and you should capitalize on that season. I think when you and I got started in the business, right when COVID hit, wholesaling had a great season.
No, dude.
I mean, it
massive
was...
massive rip.
You would just yeah. lock up a contract and 2 weeks later, you'd sign it for $40,000.
Yeah.
You can't do that right now.
No.
And so I think having private money where you can afford to close on a project leaves that door open. And I think for right now, it's going to be a very, very valuable exit strategy for us. And if the market slows back down, flipping will continue to be our number one because a really nice fixed up home is always going to be more desirable when buyers have the option.
Exactly. I think it comes down to always being able to shift and adapt. I mean, those are the two big things. You shared the example of a couple of years ago. It was wholesaling, right? Being able to shift into and adapt, even if you were a big flipper, to start assigning more stuff, even though you weren't totally comfortable with it. But you need to be able to recognize, hey, this is what the market's doing. This is what's going to be most profitable for my business and the best route to take. I think we're at a point right now with wholetailing for that here in the Valley to where if that's not a tool in your tool belt, you're leaving money on the table.
Yeah, and I think the biggest thing to be aware of with wholetailing, unlike wholesaling, and we never encourage people to lock up deals that they can't perform on, right? So I have to restate this a million times or else there's going to be some agent or broker or attorney somewhere that's going to claim that I encourage this. Don't lock up deals unless you personally can perform. That being said, if you go to wholesale a deal and it doesn't work, I mean, you could technically cancel and give up your earnest money and lose a few bucks and you're not locked in. The downside to wholesale is a lot like the downside to flips. If you made a wrong assessment and you close on that deal, you cannot go back to the seller and hand it back and get your money back. So there's risk involved, and that's why you make more money. And the second caveat to this is when you're comparing your wholesale to your wholetail profit, remind yourself with wholetail, you're paying closing costs twice. Mm-hmm. And with wholesale, there's no fees. So if they make $20,000 and you forgot, they each make $20,000 and you forgot about closing costs.
And commissions.
And commissions, then wholetail is going to make you less. Yeah. So for our rule of thumb, typically the way we view it, if a flip's going to make us 100% of our profit, we will consider wholetailing it if it'll make 75% of that profit, and we'll consider wholesaling it if it will make greater than 50% of our profit. The only time we really break those rules, and we did a little breakdown on Miro of all the different decision factors.
Yeah.
There were like 16, but the main things that would make us consider not closing on it and wholetailing it or flipping it is if our contractor's overworked, we are tight on marketing dollars and we want to have cash coming back sooner. If it's out of area or out of our knowledge range, right? Like commercial, big pieces of land, out of area, mountain properties, things like that. Or if it's occupied, right? If it's occupied, we may consider just assigning it to a buyer that can handle the tenants, because that can take some man hours as well.
100%. I think the kind of big reminder here is, especially when you are running your numbers, you have to, you don't want to get caught with your pants down, right? Especially if you're going to wholetail. So you need, you can't go back and fix it after you purchase it. So you need to make sure that you are purchasing the property at a deep enough discount to where you have a plan A, a plan B, and ideally even a plan C if there's a way to do it, right? Do not put all your eggs in one basket for plan A. Have enough wiggle room up front to where you can purchase it. If option A doesn't work out, you can go to option B and still have that deal be a profitable deal and not be spinning your wheels for a deal that's going to end up losing money.
And don't get emotionally involved in the decision process you made when you locked up the contract.
Yeah.
Our absolute number one deal we did last year, we bought, and Jason and I both wanted to flip it so bad because it would have been a sick house. It's a, what we call a trophy property, right? Yeah. Something you're proud of. And it would have been dope content. It would have made some money. When we walked with our contractor said, don't do that. Just list it. And we listed it and boom, we made north of a six-figure profit. And Jason and I both were like, damn, I would have loved to flip that. But you have to follow the money and make a business decision, not an emotional decision. Mm-hmm. And the same happens when you go to list a wholetail and it doesn't sell, like a property we have on Mono. You know, we thought it was going to be an easy wholetail deal. And then we didn't get an offer, so we had to pull it off and fix it up. And now we're relisting it as a flip, right?
Yeah.
So you have to be looking at the numbers and not making emotionally based decisions.
100%. Well, dude, I think that breaks down everything we wanted to chat about today, at least about wholetailing.
In sub 30 minutes.
Dang, dude. Little quick episode for you guys today. I know next week we've been trying to get this guy on the podcast for freaking 2 months, almost since the beginning of the year. And the schedules have finally matched up. We're finally going to be able to bring him on next week. Going to be a great episode for you guys. Super excited to have him on. So stay tuned for that episode coming out next week. And we'll see you guys later.
See you guys.